Hi again, this is Bob Brundage, and the date today is December the 6th, 2005. And today I'm having the pleasure of talking with a young lady up in Massachusetts who has been very, very busy in the dance field, Veronica McClure. So, Veronica, why don't you start out by telling us where you were born and brought up, and we'll kind of take it from there.
I was born in Baltimore, and I was there until 2 years after college. And while I wasn't aware of square dancing until late in the game, that's where it started, because I joined up with a bunch of college students from Johns Hopkins and Goucher College in Notre Dame of Maryland, and they were known as the Gouchkin Hoppers, which was reversing the syllables of Hopkins and Goucher. And drew folks from several other schools as well. And I got involved with that because there, for some reason, at school there was a big event with a lot of different people from different places, and there was an easy level square dance because everybody could join in on that. And I just thought that was a hoot. I had a great time. And so somebody told me about the college group because of my interest from that chance encounter with squares. And that's what started it. I was a horse crazy youngster, and although I never owned a horse, I had found ways to get access to horses, and I think when I got interested in rounds, I was transferring a lot of the idea of movement from two beings, horse and rider, to two beings, person and person.
Yes.
And so I stumbled in college. We had required phys ed credits to make up, and I really didn't want to do much in the real sports, but there were two dance classes, which I took, and
yes,
I enjoyed a whole lot. When I got more and more involved with the Gouchkin Hoppers, and they had some rounds as well, I started doing that too. The first time I met anybody from the Gouchkin Hoppers was a fellow named Frank Kuyawa, who I think is a professor in Florida State University now, but anyway, he was trying to get just a square of anybody together because he wanted to work out teacup chain, which he had just learned about. So the first thing I did was help out with this guinea pig square for Frank to figure out teacup chain. The only thing I knew. And so they said, oh, well, we're dancing, you know, this Sunday. Come on over, come on over. And so I went over.
Yeah.
Walked in, and they were just beginning to square up. They needed one more person, and I'm saying, but, and the first thing out of the caller's mouth was teacup chain. So I sailed through it,
yeah,
and I didn't know a single thing after that. Nobody could understand why I would know teacup chain and nothing else.
That's
they
funny.
Kept thinking I was spoofing them or something, but
right.
Eventually Frank showed up and corroborated my story.
Yes.
But it was a strange introduction
right.
to a group.
Okay. Well, then, when did you pick up with Don Beck?
Oh, well, that was after I moved to Boston. I moved to Boston on December 1st, 67. Earlier in the fall, September or October, another woman who had been dancing with the Gouchkin Hoppers came to Boston. She had been at Johns Hopkins as a graduate student,
uh-huh,
and was coming to Boston to do a postdoc, I think at MIT. And so that was earlier in the fall of 1967, and she saw a note or met somebody who knew that there were a small group of folks getting together who were all members of the Outing Club. And
oh, yes.
The Outing Club had occasional Eastern or traditional style square dances.
Yes.
But there were some folks in the outing club who were comfortable with those dances, who had heard of Western style and were curious and wanted to try it out.
Right.
And Don wanted to try to learn to call it. So this informal subset of outing club folks got together so that Don would have a group.
Yes.
And so that was the beginning of Don's calling, uh-huh. as well as the predecessor of Tech Squares.
Yes.
Now, there, when I came to visit Linda Silversmith, the woman who came up in the early fall in October and danced with the Outing Club group
uh-huh.
once in October, when I moved up on December 1st, I then began dancing with them on a regular basis, but I was not part of the in crowd. It was definitely a circle of close friends from the outing club. They were happy to have other people and all that sort of thing, but I'm sure there were conversations about the organizing of all this that
yes.
occurred without everybody in attendance, but just a core group of people. That's the way group dynamics works.
Right.
And so that continued. Don immediately impressed me as a very busy person, getting an amazing amount of stuff done, because he was working full time. He was taking graduate courses in the evenings, and before I got there, one of his parents had died. His parents lived in Springfield, which is about two-thirds across the state towards New York. And so he was running back and forth a great deal of the time, taking care of the surviving parent and trying to settle the estate.
Uh-huh.
And then the surviving parent died, and he was really, just embroiled, not in a nasty way, but just the one estate wasn't quite settled yet, and then they had to settle the estate on top of the estate.
Yes, right.
And there was a lot of property management, and it was very difficult for this poor guy.
Yes.
So as the next September was coming around, and he's trying to line up the next night school course he was going to take while working full-time and while spending as much time as possible in Springfield.
Sure.
It finally turned out that the only way he could get the course he really needed next was to do it on the night where we had been dancing.
I see.
And that was a real sad blow.
Yeah.
Because everybody was assuming we're just going to keep going.
Right.
You know? So that, but because he had to figure out his courses early in the fall, we knew early in the fall what his situation was. And there was a weekend set aside shortly after all the students came back to school,
yes.
and the newcomers, the freshmen, so that they could try out a lot of the various student activities.
Right.
And the outing club had a whole lot of things, because they have some people who hike, some who do canoeing, some who do rock climbing. They have all these different activities under their umbrella.
Sure.
So over the weekend, there were different groups going off to do different things, but they scheduled another easy level square dance at the end of the weekend to bring everybody back together again.
Uh-huh.
So I asked one of the fellows, now a lot of people in the outing club group were not students at MIT. Many were alumni.
Oh, yes.
But not that many were in class at that time.
Yes.
But there was a fellow named Charles Hutfunny, who was a freshman during that first year that I was in Boston. And I asked him to go to the outing club's easy level dance at the end of the activity,
yeah.
introduction to activities time, to check out the caller.
Right.
Because we were losing time.
Yeah.
So Charles and I dressed in our square dance clothes. And, of course, we were the only ones in square dance clothes because most of these were folks who had been out doing their rock climbing or whatever.
Right.
And the caller was named Tex Wilson. He took one look at us and just breathed this big sigh of relief. I think he thought he had been booked for a regular modern Western square dance.
Oh, yeah.
And walked into a one-night stand. Now, not that he couldn't do a one-night stand, because it's just like doing a beginner's night.
Right.
But it's that initial shock when you see that the situation's other than you thought.
Yeah.
And we danced the whole evening with him and were interested, and we got him aside at the end of the evening and explained what had happened with having and then losing Don Beck, and also wanting to move this to a real student activity, not as an informal offshoot of the Outing Club.
Yes.
So Tex agreed to call for us for a while. He gave us a break in costs and so on, because we were having to basically start it anew.
Yes.
And so we, at first, we were still prevailing on the Outing Club to book us rooms, because you had to go through a process before you were a real independent student activity.
I see.
And the Outing Club was doing so, but now we were a different situation than this core group of close friends that
right,
were all
right.
members of the Outing Club.
Well,
so we eventually got it restarted, and we found that we had so many people wandering in and out that we decided to have a class, which
yeah.
is called Crash Course. Crash Course is still going on.
Yeah.
It turned out to be a very effective vehicle for the setting there at MIT. And as we worked our way through the ropes of becoming a student activity, it became clear that we had to have an entry point twice a year
yes.
for first-timers. The only way to do a class twice a year was to keep this crash course kind of approach. And so the next crash course is graduating a week from tonight.
Oh, okay. So you're still with them, then?
Well, I'm planning and leading the Grand March.
There you go.
I just retired again from queuing for Tech. I had been queuing pretty regularly on a once-a-month basis for the past probably 5 years.
Yeah.
But it's not the critical mass of experience and so on that I need in order to keep everything going.
Right. Backing up a little bit, I noticed that you, way back in 66 and 67, you went to Berea to their Christmas dance school.
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
Berea College?
I don't remember that.
Is that right?
No, I don't think so.
Well, sorry about that.
Oh,
well,
I'm curious. What made you think I did?
Well, Anna sent me some material about your background, and that was part of it in there. I don't know where.
I have been to a number of dance camps, but not
yeah.
that.
Okay, well, moving along, as they say, I noticed... I'm anxious to hear about the Vagabonds.
Ah.
Now, or maybe we should say, first of all, when did you get away, not away from necessarily, but putting more importance on round dancing?
Well, after I came up here, there was no round dancing associated with the Outing Club version of
oh, yes.
the situation.
Okay.
So then we had to put some attention for a while on just getting reorganized and
yes.
gradually becoming the student activity. And so then I started wanting to have rounds as well once things kind of started settling down.
Uh-huh.
And since there was nobody who knew anything about rounds in the group, it was sort of just fell on the one who was blabbering
yes.
to do something about it. I'm sure a lot of things happened that way.
I'm sure, yes. Right.
And So I started doing what I had remembered from learning in Baltimore, and the folks who were teaching the Gauchkin Hoppers had been very, very encouraging and flexible and willing to teach what the Gauchkin Hoppers really were capable of and not just do a set program.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so I started doing some of that, and then for a little while Vernon Porter came in and taught a bit, but that didn't go over terribly well. He wanted to do things in a certain way, and so that drifted on and off and off. Other people also began trying both calling and queuing.
Yes.
And over time, Tech has produced a number of leaders.
Okay.
Some more obvious than others.
Yes.
Clark Baker is very obvious.
No. Right.
But there are people within the group who can call and queue to some extent.
Yes.
And they always have been. It's pretty amazing. So as the bicentennial began lurking on everybody's radar, I've always been interested in history.
Yes, I know.
So, I mean, even before I got to Boston. And so I began getting interested in the bicentennial as an opportunity to explore dance history.
I see.
And so, fortunately, here in Boston at that time, were several people who, in the world of an academic approach to dance history, were tops in that field.
Okay.
And that's Ingrid Brainerd and Julia Sutton, along with a then rising star, Margaret Daniel. And again, some of the dance camps I went to were in social dance history, concentrating on Renaissance and Baroque styles of dance.
Yes.
And I took classes with the three that I mentioned, and I had always already been interested in sewing.
So, yes.
We got into the costumes and so on, it was a very joyful group process, because for both our vagabond's attire and for our bicentennial clothes, the whole group got together and helped each other. Like, the men made the panniers for the women's 18th century dresses.
Yes.
And at one point, and the vagabond dress, the square and round dance dress, was made of patchwork, and the patches were sized differently according to the height of the person wearing the dress, so the proportions would remain the same.
I see. Yeah, interesting.
And so one day we had this gathering, the men and the women. We had certain solid colors and prints, and everybody was invited to bring fabric if they wanted to contribute to the pot.
Yeah.
And here's these MIT types making sure that they had these absolutely square pieces in exactly the proportions for the individuals.
That
was great.
I see. Okay.
And then the women were making the men's shirts.
Yes. Okay.
But it was a wonderful time. And then, you know, everybody had something to do with other persons' outfits.
Right.
And so there was a real ownership.
Yes.
Amongst the group.
Right. Okay. Well, I know you've done a lot of exhibiting with the Vagabonds. You've been to a national convention way back in 1974, I've got written.
We were in the Baltimore National. We were in Atlantic City.
Yes.
I think those are the two nationals. So, although we've danced several times at what used to be the Canadian Round Dance Festival at Toronto and Hamilton. It moved one time after another. And we've danced in all the New England states.
Right.
New York State, Pennsylvania, I think we've danced in New Jersey, Maryland.
Right. Well, that's great. So, then I see along in this time you were also a contributing editor to the New England Caller Square Dance magazine. I also have copies of a couple of your articles that that you put in the magazine at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And very interesting. So,
did any one of them grab you in particular?
Well, I kind of skimmed through them, to be honest with you, the first time I looked at them. And I didn't really get the content of the overall picture, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I will go back over those again, I'll tell you. Now,
well, more recently, I've written some dance history, very informal articles for the Weavers Round Dance email list. And now I've been approached by Universal Round Dance Council to put some items in their technical manual
from a
historical point of view.
Oh, great, great. Well, I know that's a very, very busy organization, too.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of organizations, I see you've been a member of many, many. I've got written down here Legacy and NECA,
mm-hmm.
Accord and NECORTA,
mm-hmm.
and one that I'm not familiar with, MEHPER.
That's an organization that's physical ed, because they had a dance section.
I see.
Most of the people were, probably still are, I'm not active in it now.
I see.
Were involved in dance as it's presented in schools and colleges as a physical recreation, physical education, or physical recreation activity.
I see.
And,
okay.
I went to and participated in a number of like teachers' gatherings, and I was very pleased. For instance, at one point they had a bunch of eighth graders who had been working with a square dance caller for some
right.
time, and they just got up and danced as they normally dance. The caller was calling as he normally called.
Uh-huh.
Really fascinating, sitting amongst people and not telling them that I knew about square dancing, and watching how they reacted to watching the kids.
Uh-huh.
It was really great because, well, they were talking about the kids' response time, about their agility and changing direction and taking direction.
Oh, yes.
Two very different things. And about their flexibility. They're looking at it, from a very physical point of view. And it'd really be maybe interesting for folks now even to have persons who have an allied but not identical point of view talking about what that is that you do.
Yes. I hear you.
I'm always interested in cross-fertilization of different related but different activities.
Yes.
Even at the moment, I'm working with another person brainstorming combining a vintage dance event with a Scottish country dance event to make a Victorian Scottish dance weekend.
Okay.
And I think the theme I would like to have is memories of Balmoral, Balmoral being the Scottish castle that Victoria took a great liking to and spent lots and lots of time away from her job.
Yeah.
Up in Scotland.
Where is that weekend going to be?
Well, we're talking about locations. There's a there's a smallish retreat house in Connecticut near Putnam called Senexit House that was built by a Scotsman in the 1880s.
Okay.
And is now, as I say, run as a retreat house. It can house 30, 35 people. Yeah. I went to a dance weekend held there once before, so I know what it's like to be there and to use it and so on. And there's a Grange Hall nearby, which we had rented for the larger parts of the evening. But
yes.
The first evening, this is the theme of this evening was Memorial Day 1905. So we're all pretending that we're at a house party for Memorial Day 1905.
All righty.
And so the first evening, a 10-piece brass band set up in the library, which opens to the parlor, and we pushed all the furniture away and danced for 2 hours.
Wow.
With this 10-piece brass band playing in the style of the turn of the last century.
Oh, my God.
Great.
That must be worse than 10 Scottish bagpipes.
Well, actually, it wasn't. I wasn't sure about a 10-piece brass band either, but
yes.
it worked. So don't argue with success.
No, that's true. Right. Well, I notice you also are a member of another one that I had never heard of, the Council of Research on Dance.
Its nickname is CORD. There are two groups. That one and the Society of Dance History Scholars, who are the professional organizations for academic dance scholars.
Uh-huh.
And at one point, before Anna Dixon was so involved with the New England Foundation, at one point I was trying to get the fledgling foundation linked up with them because they have this wonderful library project. And I've even more recently talked, one of the people at the Harvard Library is here, is very involved in that, and I was trying to get them connected, but unfortunately the foundation is not online enough to join in. So,
yes.
Because what they've been doing is been creating through computer systems and the internet and so on, they've been interlocking these libraries all over the place that have holdings in social dance history.
Right.
So I'd still like to see that happen, but I'm just not sure how it's going to happen.
Yes. Well, okay, well... I noticed in 1996 you were honored with the New England Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite an accomplishment, and I'm very pleased to have you as a member of that organization. Certainly recognizes your various abilities. I know I happened to be at a New England convention one year when you put on a history of dance seminar. It was
the one at Sturbridge?
Yes.
Oh, that was such fun.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed doing that.
Yes, that was...
I was very pleased with it. I mean, happily, honestly, I can say I haven't been really disappointed with anything we've done. But I somehow got a special kick out of that one.
Uh-huh. Right.
Well, it was kind of fun to have, you know, it was multimedia, so to speak, with the mannequins and the video and the real people and the pictures.
Yes, that's right. It was a very, very interesting session all the way around. I happen to think as you were talking, did you ever get to Pine Woods?
Yes, I've been to Pine Woods several times. It's really lovely.
Isn't it, though? I was on staff there for a couple of years when Modern Western Square Dancing was just coming in, and they wanted a taste of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually brought a few dancers with me. My dancers were amazed at the rest of the program, as you can well imagine. So with all their English and Scottish and Irish dancing going on. who do you, I'm really going back now, who do you credit with being your mentors?
Oh.
Back over the years.
Oh, names. You want names?
Sure.
Oh, I'm so bad at names. I'm bad at names now. I've been consistent. I've been bad at names all the way through. Eddie East was the caller at the Gouchkin Hoppers.
Okay.
And of course, they lived in Towson, Maryland. Bert and Norm. one was a male, one was a female. So what were their last names? Were my first round dance instructors. They were from the Baltimore area, too.
Oh, yes.
They lived just south of Baltimore, maybe Glen Burnie, but in that region, if not
uh-huh.
Glen Burnie itself.
Right.
But I can't remember their last names. It's very bad. But not closely involved in the
yes.
organizations of
yeah.
those things.
You don't go to their conventions or...
No, and well, you know, especially since being divorced 10 years ago and
yeah.
not having a partner and so on.
Right.
That's
right.
been very difficult.
Yes.
But I've been to some of the conventions, especially the URDC conventions, because they are offered as a dancing event.
Oh, not yes.
A meetings event. The Roundelab meetings are meetings, but...
yes.
I've been saying ever since the beginning of the phase system that it was leaving out a lot of important factors, and it's really interesting that now there's much more interest in those things.
Yes.
It's only 20 years later, but sometimes I guess ideas take a while to root.
Right.
And so... lots of times when I'm on the email list, so the Round Dance email list is called Weavers, and they're chatting about this idea, and I refrain from typing it in, but sometimes I do say to myself,
right,
I told you so.
have you done any writing of Round Dances?
A couple, but I didn't really push to have them published.
Yeah.
There's a very, very important element of round dance publishing that...
yes.
You know, just because you like to write a dance doesn't mean that you like to go through the business end of pushing it.
Right, right. Well...
And at one point, we introduced a rumba at the Canadian Round Dance Festival, and it was very popular in Canada, and nobody knew about it here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that happens. Right. Well, let's get a little bit profound here.
Uh-oh.
what's your take on the sort of the atmosphere of square and round dancing around the country? I know everybody's concerned about losing memberships here and there and losing attendance and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think square and round dancing is going?
Well, stepping way back and looking at it from the larger scheme of social dance history and also of group dynamics.
Yes.
If you look back at the history of a number of dance styles and forms, they tend to travel with a particular population.
Yes.
And I think that modern squares and rounds have been traveling with a particular population that's now aging.
Yes.
And another thing that happens sometimes over and over with organizations, especially skill-based organizations, is that the longer... the activity goes on, the more it fragments into levels,
uh-huh.
and it becomes a pyramid,
uh-huh.
with the needing a lot of introductory people at the bottom to feed the scale going up. But sometimes, if that is not balanced with the progression of the core group.
Yes.
The core group can make the pyramid top-heavy.
Yes.
And it happens Over and over again. It's happened in other dance forms. It's happened in other activities.
Okay.
It's not a thing that's peculiar.
Yes.
To squares and rounds. And I see it in other organizations. Now, this is on top of all the stuff that people are talking about nowadays, like bowling alone and the demise of the one person at home family, so that there's more time and all the changes in lifestyles
yes.
we have now. But even without looking at that, there's this long-term tendency that's been repeated again and again and again for things to go kind of with a population.
Right.
And so all the groups that I know of are saying, what do we do to get the young people involved? And there's a certain difficulty in that the older people don't want to do what the young people want to do.
Right.
It's just the way it is.
Yes.
So I suspect that perhaps the way ballroom dancing was in deep doldrums, and then after it got removed from the rising generation enough, it was okay again.
Uh-huh.
And I'm kind of hoping that's what's going to happen with square dancing.
Okay. Are you familiar with the ABC program?
A little bit, but I'm not fluent.
Okay. In case you're ever interested, if you put on your computer SD-ABC
mm-hmm.
as a keyword, you'll get a lot of information about it if you're interested.
Sure.
Some people are thinking that is the salvation of square dancing, but it's moving away from the modern Western
mm-hmm.
Dance class, year-long classes and so forth.
Oh, I think so. And you remember that the heyday of squares, you didn't have those long classes.
Sure, right.
I mean, even when tech started, we had no classes at all, and then we sort of begrudgingly went to Crash Course,
right.
which was 6 or 8 weeks to
yeah.
start with, and now it's 13, but
yes.
by law at MIT, it has to be twice a year to get
yeah.
two entry points.
I see.
And when tech was about had the name tech for about a year's length of time, we actually had a dance, our first big dance that we were inviting the outside community to come meet us, the new kids on the block, so to speak. And our byline for us is get your PhD at MIT, and we made out these silly fake diplomas as a souvenir
yes.
of this event to give everybody who came to MIT to square dance.
Right. Right.
And funny thing, only within the next year or so, the so-called PhD class, you know, more classes after you graduate,
yes.
started happening, and they started calling them PhDs. And I've always wondered if at least in New England some of that might have been kind of sparked by our introductory dance.
I see.
I don't know.
I've
never tested the idea,
right.
the thought. But it's always been in the back of my mind because if it was just coincidence, it's a very well-timed one.
Yes, right. I've heard of a couple of people talking about the fact that many things are cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about a 100-year cycle. Have you had any experience with that? Any thoughts about that?
Well, in dancing, it seems to me that you need to have maybe two generations separation.
Like
the big...
Yeah, that's interesting.
The big interest in swing dancing, which preceded the big interest in ballroom dancing, kind of did the same thing. You know, in about 20 years separation.
Uh-huh.
So you had the 40s, and then by the end of the 40s, the swing dancing was changing to more the rock and roll and so on.
Yes.
And so then when people got interested in it again, they started going back to the dancers who were dancing in the 20s and the 30s.
Yeah, that's
interesting. In fact, Manning Smith, who was active at last I was aware of is about 5 years ago. He's in his 80s, and he's still teaching swing dancing the way he did it as a teenager.
I see.
Incredible.
Yeah.
But, there is this interest that didn't go back to the 40s, but went back to the 20s and 30s.
Yes.
And then in the case of the ballroom dance resurgence of interest, including amongst younger people, it's gotten very big on college campuses now.
Yes.
And one of the advantages is that they can simultaneously accommodate people of different abilities. You can have a dance, and people just dance whatever it is they can dance.
Right.
They can go to classes to be more formalized, and if they're really interested, they can go to competitions.
Right.
But they do have an immediate opening with the general dances for anybody of any ability,
yes,
to show up.
Right.
So that gives them a different ball game, so to speak.
Right.
And with the English and Scottish country dancing, while there is a skill level involved, if you can hang in there long enough to learn the spatial patterns, you can participate. You may not be dancing, but you can hold a place.
Yes.
And make it happen through the spatial patterns. And since the spatial patterns are not as many as in squares and rounds.
Right.
The threshold's a little lower.
Right.
Well, so any time an activity's been together a long time, there's this tendency for it to develop and become more complicated and layered, but the problem is if that, you know, makes the pyramid top heavy.
Right, right. Well, how does contra dancing come into this?
How is contra dancing?
Yeah.
Well, since contra dancing is open to beginners at all times, there's
right.
very few times when you see a dance advertised as experienced.
Yeah.
And what that usually means is that the dance won't be walked through
right.
first. But all the dances are walked through first. And generally, the callers are expected to call as long as anybody needs it.
Yes.
But because the pattern repeats so many times,
right.
and because there are usually so many people who are already familiar with the dancing,
yes, right.
Usually the callers fade out.
Right.
And when they come back in, it's usually because either somebody's in trouble or
yeah.
they're warning you that we're going to wind us down now.
Right. Well, I was referring mostly to all the resurgence of contra dancing. We see it right here in Albuquerque, for example. We have a very active contra group, and mm-hmm. they dance twice a month. And well, the square dance clubs are disappearing, you know, the modern Western.
Well, I find that there's a little bit of reduction in the contra dancing here, but it's not in danger by any means.
Yeah.
One of the interesting, you know, again, group dynamics, things that happened is contra dancing has been so healthy in the Boston area.
Yes.
That
of course.
There started to be more and more dances scheduled, but eventually you begin fracturing the same population into smaller pieces
by
scheduling more and more.
Right.
And unfortunately, one of the halls that's been in use a great deal is being sold and won't be available. So
yeah.
There's a big tango group and a big contra dance group and a big swing dance group who are all using that hall weekly.
Yeah.
Now, the tango and the contra dance group are moving to a new hall. I don't know what's happening to the swing dance hall, but
yeah.
every time a move like that is forced, there's a shaky period while
sure.
the community figures out whether or not they're going to make this move.
Right, right.
So we have two big groups who are going to be hitting that shaky period come January 1st.
Oh, dear. Well,
fortunately, there is another hall for them to move to. On the other hand, when something's been going great guns in one place for a long time, it's always a shakeup.
Well, of course, they went through that out in Detroit, too. They closed the Lovett Hall.
I thought it was awful.
Yeah. But, well, this has all been very, very interesting, Veronica. I really appreciate your taking the time to sit down and talk with me this afternoon.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I hope it's really helpful for you. I'm not sure exactly, you know, if we covered everything we should, but let's talk later, too.
Unless you think of anything else, do you think of anything else that we'd like to have put down for posterity?
Not at the moment. I do have two early mentions of the emergence of tech squares from the first appearances in the New England Square Dance Caller, and I am getting copies of those. And I will send them to you.
Oh, great. That's great. Okay. Well, I hope you're not going to get snowed in.
Well, we were supposed to have snow today, and it hasn't snowed yet, so it's hopeful.
Okay.
Maybe it'll just blow past us.
Well, good luck to you anyway, and thank you so much. And if I get up to New England, I'll hope I bump into you.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for your time, and... So we'll call this the end of the tape.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Veronica. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.